Jack silently thanked the Parademdron who had saved them from the Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Saved him.
That's right. Annie put the dinosaur back with the other books. Then she gasped. Wow, she whispered, look at this.
Dreams, books, are each a world, and books, we know, are a substantial world, both pure and good. That according to William Wordsworth. Logan Pearsall Smith had this to say on the topic. People say that life is the thing, but I prefer reading. I can agree with that. The Tiger Eye Reading Room is a dedicated space on the ground floor of Townsend Hall on the University of Missouri campus. In the reading room, youth services librarians in training and early childhood educators create story times for preschoolers enrolled in the Child Development Lab program. It's a magical experience that does not translate into statistics or outcome measures or any other quantifiable evaluation system, but it is a microcosm of and almost complete justification for the entire cycle of authorship, publishing, reading, and librarianship. The Tiger Eye Reading Room series of interviews and discussions brings together all aspects of this cycle. We will be talking to authors, readers, booksellers, children, reading adults, and the occasional librarian or two. We'll try and look at all aspects of the world of books and see what connections can be made or different viewpoints expressed. This interview was originally done at the annual conference of the American Library Association in New Orleans, June of 2006. Like any convention, there are lots of people about, so there's a fair amount of ambient noise in the background. Only once did it get bad enough that I had to pause the recording before we could progress. ALA annuals are huge, cumbersome, usually in hot places, but also serve as a wonderful chance to talk to authors, publishers, and the folks who attend the meetings. The New Orleans meeting was no exception, and we got some excellent interviews out of the trip. And this is Charlie Seavey. We're at the ALA convention talking to yet another group of authors, publishers. I guess you guys are kind of combined author publishers here. And about books and reading and all the sorts of things that go along with it. And I'm here with Jimmy Gownley and John Gallagher of Kids Love Comics. This is the name of their publishing firm. Either that or they made it up for the booth. I'm not sure which. But I was looking through the exhibit guide, and here's this thing. And I said, well, yeah, kids do love comics. And this is the first time I've seen comics at ALA. So I'm here talking to these characters. And I'm going to start with Jimmy, who I understand founded this thing. And tell me about Kids Love Comics and why aren't you drawing for DC instead?
Oh, okay. Well, Kids Love Comics actually isn't a publisher. What it is an organization that's just dedicated to promoting comics for kids, comics as a literacy aid, comics as just fun and good entertainment for kids. But I'm the author-artist of a book called Amelia Rules. And the reason I guess we're not doing anything for Marvel and DC is... they have their own thing, and they're great at it, but what their interests are don't dovetail hardly at all with what our interests are, which is doing, you know, outward-looking, you know, mainstream fiction that has kids as its primary audience, always thinking of that those kids, you know, having those in mind when you create the book. Marvel and DC, they have comic book fans in mind, which is great for what they do, but comic book fans really aren't kids anymore. You know, they're 30-year-old guys, there's 40-year-old guys who grew up with them. You know, so what we're trying to do is provide this entertainment and this art form, which is a great American art form, and give it to a new generation of kids who maybe haven't seen it.
Yeah, so how old is Amelia? How old is your character? I mean, in terms of her age in the comic.
She started out as a 9-year-old, and she's now about 10 and a half.
Yeah, and how old is Buzz Boy?
Well, Buzz Boy actually went in reverse. He started off as a 19-year-old ex-sidekick, and now I've kind of gone back to the stories of when he was a sidekick, and now he's about 13.
Who's he sidekick of?
He's sidekick of sort of a Superman-type character named Captain Ultra, who, in the storylines that we're telling now, he's been sucked into another dimension. So Buzz Boy's really a sidekick without a hero, and he's been told he has about 30 days to get a new hero, or he has to give up being a sidekick.
That's great. What a great way of putting it. That. So you guys actually are pitching... you're pitching the age group of your characters. Am I right in that?
Well, to me personally, that's something I've always sort of thought was important. When I grew up, I loved things like Peanuts, and I loved Harriet the Spy, particularly, because I felt that it was an honest portrayal of the things that I was experiencing. So that was always in my mind. I don't know that that's necessarily what John was thinking.
Is Amelia growing older as you go along in this? I'm thinking about what's the little girl in Sally Forth who has been about 10 or 11 for the last 15 years.
Right, and Calvin was 6 or 50 or whatever.
No,
Amelia is definitely aging. I mean, it's a slow process. It's not that it's done in real time, but yeah, I think everybody, a lot of people had done great comics about childhood. And what I wanted to do that I thought was different was to do one about growing up. You know, to actually have the character change over time and experience different things.
The Canadian strip, for better or worse, pops to mind.
Yeah, that's a great example of it. She's one of very few people. Gasoline Alley did it, but very, very few people have tried. Doonesbury.
Yeah. So, Jimmy, you're a guy. Amelia sounds like a girl to me. How do you handle that aspect of it?
You know, I don't know. I don't think Amelia is specifically necessarily a girl's property. You know, there's a character in there, Reggie, who's her best friend, who's obsessed with superheroes and running around terrorizing the neighborhood. And as embarrassing as it is to admit, I mean, that's pretty much me.
I spent the
majority of my well, 50% of my childhood was me, 50% was being a Jedi. So I totally understand where Reggie's coming from.
Yeah, look, I spent some of my childhood with a towel wrapped around my
neck. Oh, absolutely. If you didn't, there's something wrong with
that. Yeah, actually. How about Buzz Boy? How much of that is you and,
you know,
or is it a wannabe situation?
Well,
huh?
When Buzz Boy was the older character, I used to say Buzz Boy is just like me, but he has 50 pounds more muscle, and people laugh at his jokes, where they don't always laugh at mine. And,
that's Buzz true. I never laugh at his jokes.
But Buzz Boy is a lot me, right down to the point that he has spiky hair, which is what I look like in the morning. And, Jim and I are sharing a hotel room now at the conference, and I'm sure he'll see my spiky hair at some point.
I keep my eyes closed the whole time.
But it's a lot me, and as a kid, I was just always sort of bouncing off the walls, and I wanted, with Buzz Boy, the whole idea, I came up with the name because I tried to have one of those really bad sidekick names. They always, you know, there was Robin, but that was actually one of the best names. There was a character, Mr. Scarlet was the hero, and Pinky was the sidekick. There was one little character named Dynamite, and so I just tried to come up with, and I even put him in a really bad costume with, like, bumblebee striped trunks and his belt buzzes, and so what I sort of have that in the most recent comic is he's in that suit for about 5 minutes, and then he gets into this slightly more palatable suit. But it's just, for me, it's always the fun of having energy, and that's what kids are. And then the sidekick aspect is I think every kid feels like a sidekick to their parents or a brother.
Yeah.
And they're constantly being told, you can't do that. I mean, I still remember when my brother got to go see a movie that I couldn't see. And I was like, it's just not fair. And I'm not necessarily trying to show the kids being perfect, but just being kids, and also saying that kids can still be stand up and be heroes and do good things.
Yeah.
I think that's something that, unfortunately, DC and Marvel has sort of lost their way with a lot of superheroes don't act very heroic anymore in a lot of comics.
Well, I'd have to think about that one for a while. I was mulling over the third Batman movie when Chris O'Donnell comes along. And half of that movie was, well, you're a kid, you can't do that sort of thing.
Right.
So he would maybe react the way Buzz Boy would.
Yeah, and I think, and naturally, you know, Chris O'Donnell is Robin. It was the sidekick.
Yeah, and, and he's, older than I am. Well, no, that's not possible.
Exactly. Well, that was I think a big part of it. The part about heroes not being very heroic is, you know, Batman is now, in some comics he's portrayed completely like Batman was as I was a kid, but in others he's written as though he's like a homicidal maniac. It's like Dirty Harry in a Batman costume. You know, what I saw when I first came up with the idea for Buzz Boy was there were not comics, and my interest being superheroes, there weren't that many superhero comics for kids or comics for kids in general, and that's why I think Jim and I, though we have very different books, they came together, and that's why Kids Love Comics is sort of a cause we can do together and still attract, you know, similar but different audiences.
Yeah. Earlier I heard you talk about you were doing lesson plans, stuff with grade school kids. something that obviously DC or Marvel, I don't think I've ever even thought about doing. Is this a big part of the business, or is it incidental to it, or?
It's becoming more and more. I mean, when I was a kid, it was just impossible to imagine bringing a comic book into a classroom, let alone having one taught.
Yeah.
But, I mean, issue 5 of Amelia is required reading in a class at MIT, which blew me away. You know, it's a media class at MIT, and I thought, well, that's just amazing. And recently, Ali Laga and Barry Laga wrote a book about comics in the classroom, and they included lesson plans for all the books they recommended. And it's becoming a really popular thing, not just with reluctant readers, but with, like John says, you know, moral lessons or teaching as literature, as art.
Yeah, there's always... I confess, I collected a lot of Marvel comics over the years, starting in the 60s,
yeah,
and up to the point they got up to be about $1.25, and I started dropping out then. But the artwork, a lot of the artwork always struck me as, oh, Neil Adams and some of those guys were doing really interesting stuff that kind of segues into the whole graphic novel thing that we've got going on today, which is, but you guys are really doing, I mean, this is a comic, although the picture on the back there is, yeah, that's a little different, but it's still clearly a comic.
Right. I mean, for me personally, I love that American-style cartooning that came out of the 50s, Schultz,
yeah,
you know, Walt Kelly, those guys, then going through to like people like Bill Watterson. I mean, that, to me, is such a pure form of comics, and also something that was always more associated with newspapers, but never so much with comic books. And I just think, for me, the combination of the narrative power of doing a comic book, but with the simple iconography of a comic strip, was just something that I really wanted to try.
Yeah.
You know, and I think people seem to respond to it because they're used to looking at the simpler art through newspapers or through animation and stuff. You know, which obviously John has as well with Buzz Boy, the animation stuff.
Yeah. So there's an animated version of this thing?
Well, they're, you know, it's animated in a style that a lot of people compare this work to some of the cartoons that star right now Superman and Batman and the Justice League on the Cartoon Network.
Okay.
Often have people come up to me and go, I love your cartoon, and I'm like, boy, I wish there was a Buzz Boy cartoon, but there's not. So much of me getting into comics was influenced by the cartoons of the 70s, which were created by, most of them were designed by an artist named Alex Toth. And his style, he did Space Ghost, and he did a lot of the Scooby-Doo monsters.
Yeah.
And so his art style influenced me. So I think, and I even try to include like several panels on certain pages that look almost like a, you know, if you took pictures of animation step by step.
Yeah,
where I try to have,
yeah,
it looks
yeah,
like cell animation. I try to always incorporate that at least once in every graphic novel, because I think that kids sort of put that together in their brain and it becomes animated in its feel. So
you're doing the art and the stories both.
Right,
I
write and draw.
Yeah.
I have some people that help with, you know, colors at times and things like that, but for the most part it's my vision.
Yeah.
As is the same with Jim's.
Jim, Amelia. So you do Amelia, you do the art and the stories.
Yep.
And, yeah.
I'm an only child. I never learned how to share.
Do you think you're going to spin off anything out of this? You're going to become a giant publishing empire? I mean, what's the vision for Kids Love Comics, I guess, is where we're going here.
Well, yeah, because of the way it's set up right now, it's essentially an advocacy group. We may move into the things where we're packaging books or publishing other people's work, but as it is now, it's great for us to be able to get out to shows like this and, you know, not only promote our books, but promote books of other people who are like-minded or doing things that we think are great. So we're just going to take it really slow as far as Kids Love Comics goes, because as it is, it's a non-profit. You know, it would be a whole different thing if we got into actually becoming a publishing company for other people.
So right now it's just you and John, or
no? It's a group of about 12 people that met, and we formed, you know, the criteria. And if anyone wants to submit their works, you know, to be considered as part of Kids Love Comics, they can do it through our website, kidslovecomics.com. I think how many books do we have on the website now?
We started off with about 8 books, and we're adding more as we've been talking about this for a couple years, and then the last year we've really solidified it. We're going to start adding more and more books throughout the summer. And we actually have a couple appearances starting here at ALA and moving on through next year at Book Expo America and you know, some comic book conventions.
San Diego Comic Con, Baltimore, and New York Comic Con as well.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting stuff. What do you think is sort of the blue sky it for a minute? What do you think, a whole generation of kids reading Amelia and Buzz Boy and the other characters from Kids Love Comics?
I really think, you know, yeah, I do think that's really possible. I mean, I can't speak for my own work, you know.
Yeah.
But for the other people in Kids Love Comics, I look at these things and I think these are people who are really thinking of kids. They're really thinking of a mainstream audience. They're doing something that's accessible and good, but also sort of high-minded in that it's not talking down to anybody. And I think there's any number of people who would just latch on to that kind of storytelling and love it. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the authors I talked to this morning writes YA, kind of young adult fantasy thing, so maybe just a couple of notches older than where you are, but one of her observations was that kids really know when they're being condescended to.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so clearly you're aiming at not doing that.
Well, that's probably... been, you asked why we're not working for DC or Marvel, and not to pick any specific cases, because they do it very well in many cases, aiming at younger kids, but I have seen examples from the mainstream publishers and others that they are writing, it's like in the 70s they did a Teen Titans comic, in the 60s too, and it was, the kids would speak in like slang that was like, oh, that's groovy, Wonder Chick, and it was 40-year-old men writing what they thought teenagers would talk like, and the kids completely could tell, and I read it when I was 7, and to me it was like reading the Batman TV show in a comic book.
Yeah,
it was campy, but not intentionally.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes when people write for kids, it's like, oh, well, let's take this story and cut half of the intelligence out of it, and that's a kid's story, and I don't think that's the case, and kids can really tell it, and you know, even with Buzz Boy, he's 13. My main audience is 5 to 11, but I've learned just from my daughter with her Barbie, she wants to be in that next group. And then, you know, my 19-year-old Buzz Boy, maybe 13-year-olds like that. But it's you know, they seem to always appreciate it if you're talking one level up, and that sort of seems to be the happy medium that kids can appreciate.
So how do you get yourself into that 9 to 11? Mental state where you know
as well. It's really easy.
Well, you guys are a lot goofier than I did. Yeah, okay, never mind.
It's actually harder to not be in the 9 to 11 mindset.
Right. Right, exactly. And I draw my Buzz Boy's a diner loving superhero, and I actually have a diner booth in my studio that I used to tell my wife, I would get rid of a drawing table if someone would just get me a diner booth. It's the perfect height. So I actually work, I do graphic design as well, in this diner booth all day long, and I just think it's almost like I live in a cartoon world. And,
yeah,
and it's,
yeah,
it,
yeah.
It's actually, you know, it's the hard part is stepping outside that.
Yeah, yeah. So you live in your comic world. Buzz Boy is a true buddy.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
A Buzz Buddy.
I was thinking about, you were talking about Teen Titans, and I remember a couple of, I don't know if Marvel ever tried anything like that or not. I mean, in a way, the adult DC and Marvels are, they're sort of teenage boy fantasy sorts of things. Guys with big muscles, girls with big chests, and,
right.
You know, all that, daring do sort of thing.
Yeah, and, well, you know, X-Men for a while in the 70s was written by Chris Claremont, who had been a writer on General Hospital, I think, for a
had
small
he really?
Time.
Yeah.
So he had that. He brought a soap opera feel, and it was a very popular comic with women. But there were always titles that were, I think, more mainstream, and Jim and I were talking this today about ElfQuest, which was about elves, and you know, so there always was something out there, but it's gotten harder and harder to get these people into comics. And manga, Japanese comics have reached out. Women are very much getting into that, and girls, and in an audience that wasn't being approached before.
Yeah, you know, in truth, one of the things Kids Love Comics is trying to do is to break down a lot of the problems we have. The distribution system, as it's set up, is not friendly to new readers, women, or children.
Yeah.
The publishing companies, not really friendly to new readers, women, and children. And what we're trying to do is find a place, like if it's just even the website, kidslovecomics.com, where you go and you know that all of these books are like-minded. They are. You don't have to have a degree in comics to follow this continuity.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you don't have to necessarily go into a shop that maybe not be the most friendly place to you. Not that I don't love the comic shops, because I love them. All of them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm a lot older than you guys, and I still cruise through the Marvel sections every now and then.
Sure, absolutely.
And I really like some of the Batman stuff they've done, you know, more recently and all that. Talking about the distribution end of it, what is your distribution setup? Do you get into the comic book stores? Do you sell them off the usual racks, or are you going to market largely through the web?
No, we've both done the comic book distribution. Both Fuzzboy and Amelia, and I think all the other Kids Love Comics books are all sold through comic book shops. But what we're trying to do is, and also through bookstores and libraries and like that. But we're trying to focus much more on the bookstores, the libraries, you know, web sales, schools, more non-traditional, more outward-reaching things. The comic book shops are great, but there are for comic book fans. I don't think you're going to get too many new comic book fans if you don't try to work beyond comic book shops.
Yeah, they've got a built-in set of expectations and don't rattle load that cage but so
right.
much. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, so
but we're happy to sell to them.
Yeah. But I think, well, the romance writer I was talking to had some comments about the publishing end of it and the distribution end of it, and there some things I hadn't realized about the publishing industry, which I know has been increasingly conglomerated over the last 25 years, and I haven't paid attention to the comic book end of it. But so did you guys face resistance when you first started coming up with these, or
I don't know if it's resistance as much as a lot of people just didn't care, and their apathy would be a great description.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's one, if you're going just to comic book shops, there's one main distributor of comics in the entire world now, and while they do the best they can, you know, there are multiple book distributors out there, so it's a case of trying to not ignore the comics, because there's a lot of great comic shops, and that even cater to young audiences and libraries, but what we're just trying to do, and what Kids Love Comics, is reach out to any, you know, there are plenty of states where there is not a comic shop within an hour's drive.
And what
we need to do is we need to make it so, I guess you asked what the blue sky is, that Kids Love Comics as an organization is a happy, almost obsolete collection, because kids' graphic novels would be everywhere. And, I mean, it would be fun if they were back in newsstands, in 7-Elevens and drugstores, because most people, that's where they discovered their first comic.
Yeah.
So we just want them everywhere.
Yeah.
Do you guys know, do you track at all what your sales to libraries are?
To a degree. You know, we did an edition of Amelia with my little small publishing company, Renaissance Press, the trade paper, back in 2002, I think. And that was just the comic book shops. When we got larger distribution, we got Simon Schuster actually distributed two versions of Amelia. It sold 15 times that outside the comic book industry. And it was into children's sections of bookstores, which was really an amazing thing. And I would get letters from kids that would say things like, I really like the way you use words and pictures, which is mind-blowing. It's like, I'd write back, well, yeah, it's something I invented, you know, about 6 months ago. I think it's going to catch on. So I don't know where I was going with that. Oh, but yeah.
The library just failed.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's amazing. As libraries have been so willing to embrace this medium. And, you know, bookstores to a lesser degree, but to a degree as well. It's been really tremendous. And it's always growth. I mean, I know John has had tremendous success even in just the last 5 months.
Yeah, I just got a sales report back from my distributor, Diamond Books, and basically what I found out was that 85% of all my sales are outside of comic book shops. So, it means, and you know, we have a tendency to spend at least 50% of our energy catering to comic shops, and, you know, coming to ALA, it was the right time, because they're my main client right now, and like Jim said, they're embracing this form, and they're embracing everything. You know, I mean, right now there's really superheroes in comics, and there's a couple other things, but, you know, sword and sorcery, but, you know, libraries embrace, you know, Sherlock Holmes comics, and Hardy Boys, and Amelia, and Buzzboy, and it sort of shows that it all can work if you reach out to that general audience that's out there and sort of open-minded about it.
Well, you hit libraries at a good time, because
You go back far enough and you'll find savage debates about whether we should have paperbacks in libraries or not. And you want to talk to the romance writer people about, you know, romance is still, to an extent, don't get any respect.
Well, we actually just had a conversation with someone who is still very much in the 50s mindset, like, I think these should be in the barber shop. It's well, I don't know what to tell you, buddy.
Well, grow up and get a life. Yeah, it is a minority. I think it really is,
Well, Jim was pointing out, and I think we use Charles Dickens as an example, that at the time that he was writing, he was considered the schlocky writer.
Yes, you know,
he was the Harold Robbins of his time, and it's like, I want to be the Harold Robbins of my time. You know, I'm...
Well, if you can get Harold Robbins sales, Well, guys, I want to thank you for being with us.
Oh, this has been
good, and it kind of encourages me that librarians are looking at you, and you've come to... ALA, and obviously it was an investment in time and money on your part. And
this is our second year here, and it's been great.
It is.
I mean, it's a must-do show. I really enjoy it. Yeah.
I gotta come to these summer conferences more often, maybe. But,
can't beat it.
Okay, Jimmy Gonley and John Gallagher, thank you so much, and maybe we'll see you next year.
Sounds good.
Great.